Meeting Summaries podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our May meeting started with the usual roundtable session, moderated by Brad Vokey.
Well, essentially,
the time machine worked well.
Yeah, essentially, reinstall, I think, was on the Mac pretty much, you know, the best that she could have hoped for. It's not like Linux where a reinstall, depending how you have it set up. Like the way I set up under Linux, I got system stuff, swap, and the home area. The Mac doesn't quite like it, although you can get really creative and do it that way. But like you say, with Time Machine, I mean, that was the best you could have hoped for.
Okay. Thanks.
Next, Backcorn?
Yeah. Toshiba satellite less than a year. My brother-in-law decided he didn't want it anymore, so he passed it back. I'm the one that set it up for him. So I get it back, fired up. It's the network router. On the one hand, it seems to say it's connected. I go in and I check my router, and the router seems... but it doesn't give it a P address, etc. So I'm going through and I have services to see if there was not. The DHCP client is running. When I try and run it, it comes back and it says VIP service not run. So I'm going through and I'm trying to find the dependencies. Long story short, everything seems to come back to say it's failing because VIP service. Now, I tried a Linux live CD. The hardware's it all worked on Linux. The hardware's all something or Windows 7 home. And, you know, like I say, the router sees it, shows it's there, but not issued an IP address. None of the programs can come. Somewhere, it's secret.
To try uninstalling the driver for that network interface and try and reinstalling the driver for that?
I went through that. Yeah. Didn't.
And this was just in Windows 7, you said?
Windows 7.
Okay. I know there's an issue with some of the machines on Vista, and we've seen it once, too, in 7. There's actually a knowledge base article for it. There's a registry key for in local machine, current control set services, TP. I can email it to you later. Okay. But the GUID of the devices, you have to enable one of the flags on it, and then it just works like magic. Like, we had a couple machines, especially with Vista, but I've seen it with 7, that they just refuse to grab an address.
Yeah, there's something compatibility between each. I don't know what it is. I remember. There's a flag on there. But anyways, it works on some routers and some routers.
Yeah.
And Vista was a real problem.
Anyways, like I said, the internet seemed to be working quite well. Like I said, I just had it all getting ready.
Yeah.
I handed it over to him, and now, not sure what he was doing with it. So is this thing, even though a fine working machine, like hiccups and some design?
Yeah, I had that happen with my own too, and I also have a satellite Realtek adapters in 8191.
Because I did go into my other waste of time.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah, if you can send me what you got.
Sure.
I'm just hoping that the system frelled and I'm back in, you know, reload time.
Yeah.
Prefer not, but...
Well, it's worth a try anyway.
Yeah, at this point, I'm kind of using it as a learning because, you know, nobody's really going to be using these for a while, but I wanted to clean it up and need it.
Yeah, I've been using my machine on the Red River College network and it's working fine, and just one day it just died. And unfortunately, I only found out about this fix later and, you know, like 2 months later, and sure enough, it did the job. So, yeah, worth a try.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not really sure what happened with this. Like I said, I tried to keep it up to date for him, but a few months back, he stopped even having me have a look at it. I was the one, I even got TeamViewer with it. I said, I'll go in every month, I'll fix it up, I'll clean it up, make sure everything's sticking. But he stopped doing that. Perfectly honest, when I got the machine, he was letting friends of his use it. It was porn, it was all kinds of crap that I had.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So he's one of those install everything under the sun people?
Yeah. It's really nice.
Oh, there you go. I wouldn't be surprised if you have a virus that's turning it off on you.
I went in and I cleaned up the viruses.
Why don't you just reinstall?
That sounds like what happened. A lot of the viruses that I have been removing where I would put them self work stack, and when you remove them, people just put them out back to us.
That was kind of
the virus that was letting the traffic read it.
Yeah, that was kind of my fear. I think I only put them into the chest for one.
I think
the system's really frail, but I'll look at what...
Yep.
It won't.
Unless you need to download any pictures first.
Plug it in here. Bring it next month. Plug it in.
Hey!
Wait till December.
Next owners, we'll take care of it.
So here's something I had an issue with.
I was trying to troubleshoot an issue with Mono, it turns out, and they do a lot of internal bookkeeping on file handles and stuff like that. And when I was trying to troubleshoot process handles and kind of file handles I'm using, you've got the ulimit command, which ends up setting things in the kernel to say the current user can do this, the current user has this many programs open, stuff like that. How in the heck do you read the current value of that thermometer? Like, I want to know the percentage, how close it is to its limit. Is there any possible way? Or can you just set the high bound on it and then just wait? Well, there's like, you can do, what's the file handler? But it doesn't say how many are per user.
There may be a flag that lets you go after your PID.
Because there's like the ulimit command. It's got all of these different things you can set. But I have no idea how to read them. This one was Linux.
/prop.
Well, I mean, it was kind of interesting. It'll say what the file handles are there, but there is still an upper bound on the amount of file handles a particular amount of processes that can
switch. Well, the default to start out,
right?
You can adjust. So maybe it'll default the kernel. Maybe a file down current status is processed.
You can do LSOF.
You can do it specified by user. There's a LSOF. You can specify by PID or.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, nice trace will probably show that it just walks through.
Yeah, that's sort of interesting because I found like Mono was just doing weird stuff. They do their own accounting, and they were whatever we were doing ended up making the whole system itself. So it hit a point where it refused to give me any more file handles, despite the fact that everything was set. Because I was trying to troubleshoot the stuff, I'm really curious if there's easily see, because it's funny you said it. I guess the easy way would be to set it until it stops working. Down.
Yeah, even if you set particular resources to unlimited with ulimit, there may be system-wide limits that you run into as well.
Okay.
And things like open file tables are probably limited at some other level.
Yeah, because it was, I think, I was 1,000 files open, 1,000 file handles. So I wasn't hitting any limit on user, any. It was weird. It's within Mono, there's a to-do. I read through the source code, there's a to-do that says, like, make this grow. Basically, they're doing their own stuff instead of them with the kernel. Good times.
The kernel is bioprocessed. It's hard to see.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Right. And some applicants third and install it, and they tell you you must go out on parameters to allow the amount of shared memory or shared memory or their software will cause mysterious.
Yes, it's our problem.
That with like bar extended.
I've seen it with their software.
Yeah, it's .net.
I'll jump in with one. My name is Robert Lacroix. I'm an impromptu sysadministrator for Power Sales and Operations at Mettawa Hydro. We have a set of fully patched Red Hat 6 boxes, and my greatest technical achievement is getting single sign-on working with Active Directory. But the problem I'm having is we're on a separate domain, and we want some people from the Hydro domain to be able to get in our boxes. And it's taken me a year with help and without help to try to get this. And at one point, I had everybody in the whole both domains log into the system, and then nobody. And then so finally, I got our domain going, and that's the bare minimum. But I would like to be able to have some people from the Hydro domain get into our domain as well. And can't find any solution there. Anybody experts on Samba, WinBind?
Are you using actual U or LDAP?
Real AD, yeah.
NSS switch?
Yes, sir.
You should be able to basically duplicate what you did. I would imagine. Okay. I've never done, like, with LDAP, it's multiple LDAPs.
Okay, because what I've got...
What
I've got to try to limit we want to limit usage, right? So not just everybody in our domain. I've got one particular Active Directory group in our domain. Is where we authorize users. I've got no local user machines except for root. And we've got a second Active Directory group which lists the people in the other domain we want to give grant access. And I can only see that there's an option in PAM WinBind where it's saying allow group members to access. I think you can only provide one group there. So that's where I'm running into trouble.
Well, the PAM is the actual things you permit, whatever, and you can say at the bottom of it that you can have most of those. Like SSH will bind against local, go and search whatever else you have going. But you can write in there, like, get some password or whatever, as opposed to the shadow. But at least the PAM will duplicate that, assuming on the file system. like if there's multiple configuration files or something, depending on how you set up under the set configuration file.
Yeah, this is the Pam Wynn bind at C Security.
Yeah. But you have in the config, but you have to,
which config?
Like where you have configured. Where you want.
Yeah, that's configured in there's the KRB. What is that? I just got the key tabs going.
Yeah.
That's how I got the single one.
But yeah, I mean, like, I put stuff on LDAP that I did. In the PAM, you actually specified the PAM LDAP, and then it's a config file. So do that with AD, you could just do it again. I just have an extra in the PAM.
Okay. Red Hat wasn't any use for me. They were trying to tell me to install Kerberos. Give me the Kerberos, PAM Kerberos module. And I say, no, this is a pure WinBind install. So my ticket's been open.
There's lots of this in the room and everywhere else from LDAP. So, I mean, I don't know, but it should be able to act as an LDAP server, or at least put a box in if you're really hard for us.
Yeah, no, I've got no control on configuration in our network. I'm not our network.
I thought it was something you had to do. These other people already have their own active that's authenticating them.
Yeah, no, I on a misconfiguration, I had everybody in the whole corporation coming in, and so, both domains, and so once I was able to limit it, Ellen got our own. So I thought we can add the external users in another group in our domain, but I just can't seem to specify two groups.
You sure you had it working with both domains? You sure you didn't have it set for everyone? And then it was like a guest account or something? Like
yeah, it was probably everybody was coming in, and I didn't have any kind of limiting membership.
My understanding is a machine can only be on one Active Directory at a time, unless you have trust between those Active Directories.
Yeah, that's right.
Our share is going to be just on one.
Right, our Active Directory has a trust relationship with the Hydro domain. So we've got a weird system where, my email account, I've got it at. I actually have a Hydro domain account and a SS domain account. And so that's why I can get my Outlook through the corporate exchange server. I'll keep plugging away at it. And hope, fallback, I'll just set up a virtual machine and say, kind of copy files over to that system.
Next.
I don't have a new stumper of the month, but I have some follow-up information on last month's stumper. Just to summarize quickly, since none of you will probably remember exactly what it was, but I was seeing a weird issue with systems that upgraded from CentOS 5 to Scientific Linux 6 with load averages never really staying at zero on an idle system. They would kind of go up and then work their way down and then go up again. I looked at a graph of it, and yeah, it would kind of spike up and then trail down, spike up again. And the spikes were happening at sort of weird intervals. It wasn't even consistent. What I did find out since then, though, is it does seem to be related to IRQ balance. And on a single processor system, I don't see this problem. But all of my workstations and servers now are multi-core. And and it appears that the more cores I have, the higher the load average climbs. And when I run top with minimal delay between updates, then I can see occasionally IRQ balance climbing up to the top. And I wasn't seeing it with a slower interval, because it would just do its thing and then go away. But it was enough to affect the load average, but not enough that I was seeing it on top. But what I can't figure out is why IRQ balance would be that much busier now than it was on the earlier kernel that I had with CentOS 5. And I also can't find any parameters for tuning IRQ balance. So just wondering if anyone has run across that issue before.
Did you search the Red Hat Bugzilla, like IRQ balance, see if there's any stuff like that? Chances are
not specifically for that, no.
Yeah, I'd search for that, and I think you can just kill IRQ balance. I don't think it's required for anything. I think it helps, but it's not.
Okay.
From my understanding, anyway. Someone could correct me. I think you can just, even on a running system, just kill it.
Its role is basically just to help spread the interrupts across your processors so you're not overloading one of the cores.
Are you sure you're just not chasing like a red herring where, just like you said, the graph might be more sensitive to IRQ balance?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
So it's actually catching it at the first instance as opposed to the end, and it's such a small instance that you're just seeing it in that graph, but it's not really affecting load?
Yeah. It's hard to know.
If you're running a scientific Linux, they've had a lot of ups and goes. It used to be the Irogen, but the one now they can fan it out. They've had a problem with those chips having slight differences, and they've ironed that out in the various fix levels. And I would suggest get 0.1 or higher current flags, even boot it up and see if it's... Because there's a lot of various patching. It wasn't really patching, it was boot kernel. You had to add specific hardware for this specific kernel because in this specific hardware-related problem, and to circumvent it, the later kernel, you had to disable the features and get past that. And then a couple of kernel versions later, you can take out the override, and everything works smooth and nice. You're kind of getting into the...
My CentOS 5 systems were also using IRQ balance, and it seemed to be running
which
fine.
Kernel?
So.
They were at 2.6...
2.6.18, and we're now 2.6.32 with Red Hat Enterprise 6 series.
The end of 2.6 with... The end of the 2.6 series? 39?
Oh.
39? Yeah. They fixed a lot of stuff along that period of time, right? So if you're running a little bit older hardware or newer hardware, you can have problems. They didn't solve it and got rid of a whole bunch of... That's why I suggest you think it's kernel issue, because you can dig for a long time to find out exactly which motherboard process feature you're fighting with, where it appeared in the kernel, and what fix you have to. And they don't always go up there. You kind of got to follow the amount.
Yeah.
Or know somebody that's really a kernel geek on the IRC channel or whatever and ask questions. It'd be really hard to track down, as you said. It may or may not be.
Yeah, like that's what I'm thinking. I mean, it's not really a serious issue. It's just, it's a quirk that I noticed.
The scientific Linux is fast as CentOS rolling over Red Hat patches.
They kind of leapfrog each other.
Okay.
The reason I went with scientific Linux when I upgraded to the 6 series is that for about a year, scientific Linux was way ahead of CentOS. But then CentOS caught up and leapfrogged them, and now scientific Linux caught up to them again. So,
It may be just a matter if you live with it, just wait 5 months, and probably the kernel version will change and go away.
Well, no, the kernel version won't change. They do backport patches, but the whole thing with Red Hat Enterprise is they freeze on the kernel version when they release the 0.0 release, and it stays that way for the rest of that major version.
Because they backport all the important stuff.
They backport a lot of patches, yeah.
So they're carrying support on 5.8 for quite some time. 8.6 is out. So they'll be backporting important patches. If it's a real performance, they're going to backport.
Yeah.
So keep applying your updates. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Red Hat will fix it.
On a particular bug, there is a Ksoft IRQD running, if you haven't seen it. It's actually, I look it up, it's like just basically it's for CPU kernel, light kernel. The man page basically says, yeah, it's in a lot of CPU, it might be worthwhile. Top does show up, and so it might be worth top to at least see if they're up.
So the service can be hardware available, too. It goes based on the software and runs to become the hardware.
Yeah.
So something's going on there. It would actually be interesting to more or less look at the source code and say an uptime command, just to actually get the load, how's it limited, then see what it's pulling, trying to determine what it really is.
Well, the command would just be getting those values from the kernel. It's a question of how the kernel is calculating it.
Are there commands for viewing how many interrupts fire at a time?
Cat prop.
I know there's one for Solaris. Interrupts is the total number.
VMStat would, and PowerTop actually analyzes interrupts too and looks for things that have unusually high rates of interrupts, and I wasn't seeing anything suspicious there, which is,
Another thing that could be is because you're using two different distros, the kernel options that they compile their kernel under could be different.
Not likely. Both of these try to maintain compatibility with Red Hat Enterprise, and so it's not the fact that I've gone from CentOS to scientific Linux that would make the difference. The change from 5.x to 6.x might make a difference. In fact, likely it did, because it's a different kernel, and I'm seeing different behavior, but it's not the fact that it's scientific Linux as opposed to CentOS. I'm quite sure of that.
I specifically switched from 5.8 to 6 to get certain kernel features. was the late model multi, because it wasn't performing to 25 that it started. Even though the kernels were far apart, there's a lot of support came in those point relief.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else or anything else?
Two questions. So anybody guess what this thing is?
I'm guessing Pong. Yeah. I think it's a cell phone cable.
Close, but not quite. Well, everybody knows what this is, right?
Serial.
Yeah, serial, right? So we've got RS-232 going to something over here with a coil in the middle. It's actually from cameras, an old serial interface camera. I've got a ton, so...
What?
Well, it was in the hardware, right? So.
Oh, like cheap serial.
Well, it's got a nice little coil. It probably has a little converter here, too, for guys, I think the guys that's got them.
I'll find a use for them.
The other question that I guess was, is anybody actually running, this isn't one on the web thing, but running anything off of a BlackBerry web software?
No. What's a BlackBerry?
I'm running the Android.
Sure, sure.
Okay. I'm trying to track down, I have a spare BlackBerry 700 that SIM card, but using Wi-Fi on it, and actually the voice, the white working fine on it, except one of the packages is what's called the A codec. It's more of the GS. Some, I don't actually have a codec for that, for the box one zone, so that's another option.
Is that it? One more
question. Not a stumper, I hope.
That's what you said last time.
I just got a new monitor recently at work, and it's LED backlit instead of fluorescent. And I'm having trouble getting used to the new color balance on this thing. Everything looks sort of blue shifted from what I was used to. And it's not that the colors are a problem. It still has nice, bright, vivid colors, but everything just looks more blue to me than it did. And I tried playing around with some of the color adjustments, and I still can't get it exactly the way I think it should be. Does anyone know of a simple way to calibrate colors on a monitor?
Is this on a Mac?
So it's on a PC.
There was actually some specific type of... I think was code you could actually tell it.
It's like color space profile.
More BPD. Because there's just go down to a camera store and see if they've got the spider.
Yeah.
There is a code on the front of your screen.
Okay.
And they're about 100-something bucks on them. Try Photo Central. Talk to Chris.
Okay.
Worst things come to worst left of them, but they're only on. And they can tell you some more.
That's the measure with
right
over. Okay. Or can I use in five places that makes you have a color profile or an ICM file? Place that into your file, and all the guys are stoked because they can now get a printout that looks like the screen.
You can wear blue blockers and then the difference.
Might work.
Is this Windows or Linux?
Windows, actually.
Windows, okay.
I just got an LED TV, and when I got it, I had to do a lot of setup on it, too. And when I was looking on the internet for software to do that, I did come across a piece of software there that was designed for Windows as a calibration tool for doing LEDs.
Okay.
That's all I remember about it, but that might help you out. It was a calibration tool.
Well, Photoshop 7 comes with one.
Yeah, but this was designed specifically for LED monitors.
Okay.
So whatever it does, cat's eyes and puts test back.
Okay.
It says that you adjust that. There was a reference to one, but it was only for computer monitor for TVs, so I just kind of let it slide.
Okay, thanks.
One quick one, are we done?
Let's go to RTFM. Yeah. Unless someone has one more thing, last chance. Oh, there we go.
So while we're on this topic, I guess, once again, back to the machine, that way, it's Intel HD video. Seems to work fine, listed as computer monitor. On TV and HDMI, it always seems it goes way beyond the edge of TV.
The TV might be on an overscan mode.
I've got in and done the best I can with it, and I've searched ad nauseum for an overscan with an HD. Nothing seems. Yep.
Okay.
Like I said, it works perfectly on what is listed as a monitor, but it's listed as a TV. It always seems to overscan. It was done on several TVs.
Can you change brand? Can you change brand?
That's what I said. And it did the same thing on all of them. It seemed to overscan. I'm not sure why. not sure what to do. And on the same TV, though, there's another computer that's right under the eye.
It's always just a
and
slider.
It does top for HDMI, perfect vision.
On your own.
There's the Intel HD set will generate.
Show that. Second from
it does, because...
But on your TV menus, look if you can't find something that says overscan, look for something to turn it into like something that says turn me into a computer monitor, like or a PC. Because remember, we had one model that we had a hard time finding that, and it did not make sense. And actually, I think the option was grayed out until we turned off one of the other menu options, and then that all of a sudden turned on, and I could make it a PC monitor. It was weird. Yeah, you had to go in and...
But the odd thing about it is I have a desktop permanent with the iCard, and it just doesn't work. Intel or HD. Every computer monitors, no problem.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.